two quick things before we start the show. First, Here Be Monsters is coming to Los Angeles this Sunday, October 18th. So if you live in Los Angeles, go over to our website, hbmpodcast.com/live, and find all the information and a link to tickets. Second, this episode of Here Be Monsters is a love story about mental illness and recovery. It contains two descriptions of attempted suicides. Okay, that's it. On with the show.
From the independent producer project of KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters.
Yeah, I was a deckhand for about 2 years. Worked on a scallop dredger in the Irish Sea in the North Sea. And then I got to skipper my own boat when I was 21 years old. Ended up going to work in other boats, and I just loved the getting away from everything, the peace and quiet. It was good for burning off all the excess energy I had. I just loved the whole adrenaline rush. You know, you could die at any second, and look at the big waves, and it was just a way of life. It wasn't so much a job, it was a way of life, and I just loved it. You know, it was always as if there was somebody with me, looking over the boat. The main voice I had then was, I believed I was Jesus, you know, it was Jesus talking to me. And he always used to tell me I was one of his disciples. It was a good voice, I liked that voice. So I used to feel as though I could control the weather. I could control the sea, you know. It was always like a magical feeling. You know, I felt it was almost like a gift.
That didn't last.
No, it changed. No. I thought a lot that I was insane over the years.
Monsters, the podcast about
the brain's way of finding comfort.
The podcast about
the unknown.
Hi, my name is Barry Wiley. I grew up on an island in Scotland. My mother was a nurse, my father was an ambulance driver. Lived on an island that was quiet, you know, it was a small school, small population. In primary school I had voices. I'd walk around talking to myself a lot as a child. I suppose it'd be like having an imaginary friend, as some people would say, you know. I'd be talking to like an imaginary friend. You'd just be like a voice, you know, telling you, let's do this, let's do that. They would just be suggesting things to you all the time. It was just like having a friend to talk to, you know. It was like having a chatty friend, like a good friend, like a best friend. The brain's way of finding comfort or something, you know. I just presumed they were thoughts, like everybody else, you know. They were just crazy thoughts. And I had absolutely no idea, you know, that you could take ownership of voices, or why they were there, or who they were, or what they were. They can be really nice to you, they can compliment you, you know. They can give you the answers to things you don't know the answers to sometimes. And they come in all different varieties, you know. It's like you can have friendly voices, angry voices. There's all different types of voices. Yeah, so I couldn't do the work in secondary school at all. I just progressively got worse. I was starting to get into more and more trouble all the time, you know. I was playing truant, I was smashing windows, just bad boys' behaviour, and getting suspended from class. I was told in the final year of the school not to bother coming back, you know, because I was obviously wasting my time at school. So at 15 I left and went to work at sea, sorting prawns, gutting fish, you know, just putting ice into boxes, hauling nets, We were constantly kept on the go.
And what was that like?
I loved it. I had voices when I worked at Sears as well. They weren't so aggressive, obviously, they were. It almost gave me like a sense of safety, a safe feeling. You know, it was always as if there was somebody with me, looking over the boat. If you're in a better frame of mind and you're feeling happy and content about things, then your voices are nicer, I think. Whereas if you're feeling run down or stressed or overwhelmed by things, your voices can change and become more aggressive. Sometimes the voices are so intense and so you try anything to blot it out. Before you know it, you get drunk or you smoke weed, you'd have to maybe curl up in your room and hide and, you know, just ride out this voice until it went away again. Oh, I was an alcoholic. I was drinking a lot, you know. I was in the pub every night after work. And then I would, through the alcohol, I'd end up walking home at nights and stuff. I'd be shouting and bawling, you know, to the skies, to anything. One Christmas, I went down to visit my mother. And as I was on the island, there was a family member. I called him Uncle Danny because we were quite friendly. He invited to me his house for a drink. So we went there for a drink, and the following morning I got up and I said my goodbye to him, and I walked along the road and I went home to my mum's and went to my bed and I thought nothing of it. Later that day, he'd had a friend go to visit him and his door was open and they'd found him lying in his hallway, and he had blood on his clothing. So they'd called the ambulance and they'd called the police or whatever, you know. He'd died. They suspected it could have been a murder, and I got arrested. I got taken away to a police cell for a week. People thought I was the murderer because they'd heard I'd been arrested for a murder, so rumours flew like wildfire. You know, I was scared people were after me, you know, scared of going out in society in case I got beat up, or, you know, because people thought I was a murderer, you know. Your voices can be really, really aggressive, you know. They can tell you to take an overdose, they can tell you to cut your own throat, cut your own wrists, you know, they can tell you to run in front of cars, buses, you know. It's almost like they're trying to destroy you. I don't know what the reason is, it's just the voices just seem to want to destroy you before you understand what the voices are. I had to wait a couple of months on the autopsy results coming back, and it came back that he just died through some kind of aneurysm to go into his brain, and he just died from natural causes. But it was just a really unfortunate incident, you know. Poor man died, plus I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. I must have been about 30. I would have been about 30 years old when I stopped drinking. I'd went down to visit my mother. I lived in the city myself at the time, but I'd went down to the island to visit family. And while I was down there, I'd got drunk again, and I was found sleeping on a doorstep. It was the police that tried to wake me up, and I've just completely lost the plot. I don't know what I thought I was doing, but I was just freaking out, basically. You know, and I ended up taking, like, four of them to pin me down to the ground and try and get me in the back of a van. So when I went to the doctors the following morning, I explained the way I was, and we talked for about all of 5 minutes. That's when they said, "We'll have to bring you in, Barry. You know, we'd like to do a 28-day assessment on you." Within a couple of weeks, I was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic. It was like a massive psychological wrecking ball coming through my life, you know. I'd been hit in the guts with a sledgehammer when I got told that. I knew straight away, you know, by the end of my working career, I knew fine. I had a partner at the time, and, you know, my kids, and I knew fine that would come to an end because I was schizophrenic, and it did. My first prescription was mirtazapine, 75 milligrams, which is a strong dose of an antidepressant. I got 5 milligrams of risperidone, which was the antipsychotic again, and I was put on Ritalin for a first prescription. Things went reasonably well, I think, for a couple of weeks, and then as time went by, I got worse, you know. Rather than getting better, my voices intensified. I just woke up one day in the psychiatric hospital and I was looking in the mirror and I could see my face was very drawn in, you know, I was ill and I did look almost possessed as such, you know, the way I was, just the way I looked at the time. But it just started to come out of me, this voice, and it was almost like a deep groaning voice of someone in pain or someone possessed. Ever since then I've been hearing what I thought was the voice of Lucifer. I was believing in the devil. Sometimes say a sentence in English and then it would shout it in this foreign sounding voice. It was almost like it wanted you to understand in English first, and then if you didn't respond, it would shout very angrily in the foreign Spanish, Italian sounding language sometimes. You know, I could speak in this demonic language, I could write in it, it almost looks like Italian and Spanish mixed together. I started to see things, you know, I was visually hallucinating as well. I was starting to see things come out my walls, and I was imagining I was hearing voices in my bathroom mirrors. There was people in my house and I could feel them there, and there was times it was almost like demonic figures coming out the wall, that kind of thing. I spent 7 years on non-stop medications, from antidepressants, benzodiazepines, antipsychotics, hundreds upon hundreds of different combinations of these medications. I was so locked inside my head on all this medication, I was heavily sedated, you know, feeling. Just basically ending up in a complete world of isolation, you know. 7 years, 7 years, 7 years, 7 years. I cut my own jugular open one time. I sat saturated in blood from basically, you know, my neck right down to my feet. I was absolutely saturated, and I just sat there and I opened a can of beer and continued to watch the TV. A friend came to the door and he came in and he'd seen me sitting there and I was just gone. So obviously he phoned the ambulance. You know, I never used to feel so suicidal or so homicidal on when I was off medications, but yet on them I would feel this way all the time. I voiced this to my psychiatrists, and the more and more I voiced that to them, the more and more the dose would get increased. I didn't want to be so medicated I could hardly walk and talk. It was something inside, I was almost crying inside my head all the time, every day. I was tired of having no emotions, no feelings. I was just crying to get outside my own head and be back in the world with everybody else, where I, you know, where I should be. I just couldn't take it anymore. I don't know, it's hard to explain. It was the end, really, you know, it just felt like the end. I just went and bought 2 bottles of vodka, and then I had some antipsychotics and some cans of lager, and I went and sat down on a secluded beach, you know, away from everyone. I didn't want to be found. I didn't intend on being found. And I just opened 1 bottle of vodka and I just drank it straight, you know. And I just took all the tablets that I'd had, 2 or 3 handfuls, and I just washed them down. I opened the 2nd bottle of vodka to start washing them down, and that's the last I remember. And the next thing I knew, I woke up in intensive care with my family around my bedside. So, you know, my mother was crying, my sisters were crying, and I just woke up. I didn't know where I was or what was going on. And I think I asked the nurse if I still had the other bottle of vodka. And my family laughed and kind of said, that's him, he's back to normal, you know. you know, and I got discharged the very same day. You know, I was only in for a few hours and I was out again. Part of the conditions of me getting out of hospital that time were that I took a support worker. I had to have a support worker in place before I left. It was actually Shirley, my support worker at the time. She told me about Ron Coleman and the Hearing Voices movement. I was reading about who he was and the fact he'd been in psychiatric hospital himself for 13 years solid with schizophrenia, and he actually had recovered and he'd moved on and he'd rebuilt his life. Shirley came in to see me one day. She said, Ron Coleman's going to phone you this week. I was like, surely if this guy can do that, so can I. Then he actually phoned me. He called me at home. One of the first things he said to me on the phone was, Barry, your voices are real. And I'll never, ever, ever forget that feeling. It was the first time anybody had ever accepted that my voices were real. And again, it was almost magical feeling. It was like, you know, like it's like someone had just laid a hand on me, almost, you know. It was like no one had ever, ever, ever in my entire life accepted, you know, that I hear voices, and most certainly didn't accept they were real. So yeah, it was a massive change. Ron had told me a little bit on the phone about how you can talk to your voices and how you can tell them to come back at a certain time. You know, like for instance, you can say, I'm busy just now, come back and I'll come and talk to you at 6 o'clock. So you would make that time to talk to your voices. The word recovery had never, ever even been mentioned to me up until this point. I didn't realise it was possible to recover from schizophrenia. I'd never been told. And nobody'd ever, ever told me that you can take ownership of your voices and learn to manage your life and your symptoms. You know, and it just seemed to make the change. I could see this voice had no power over me whatsoever unless I gave it that power. The voice could say anything it wanted. It could tell me to do anything at all, but only I could actually put it into action. Social media was a massive part of my recovery. I had no one else at the time, you know. Living at home, alone, on medications, I had nobody to talk to. When I first joined Facebook, I'd put my profile picture up as Ozzy Osbourne. I was still very paranoid at anybody seeing who I was, what I looked like, where I was. I was just very, very paranoid, you know. So, and I just posted a question, you know, does anyone else in the group here hear a voice in a foreign language? Instantly, all these people came to help. They just spoke to me as if I was a person, and every one of them accepted my voices were real, my experiences were real, and they were all there to support me. You know, and I had that support 24 hours a day because it was Facebook, it was a support group, which was perfect for me.
Rachel.
Hi, Rachel.
How are you?
Nice to meet you, Luke.
Thank you.
Not so bad.
Oh, we've got enough.
How many?
I've got one with Rachel, and I've got one with our previous partner.
Yeah.
So two boys.
How old are they?
My son's my previous partner's 7, and Ocean's just 9 months. He's 3 o'clock just now sleeping.
9 months?
Yeah.
Oh, right. So you're still there.
Rachel also hears voices because she's got temporal lobe epilepsy, and voice hearing's a part of that, you know, so she understands all about hearing voices as well. She was a big blue eye on her profile picture for about a year and a half too before I even got to see what she looked like, you know. So neither of the two of us saw each other, even though we were in love months before. We didn't even have a clue what each other looked like. It was quite mad the way it happened.
Can you remember what she responded with in that first message?
I think I'd said something about talking about the devil or something in the group. I think she just laughed, you know. She went, I don't think it's good to talk about these kind of things in an open space, lots of laughs or something. So then we just went into private messages and we just began to chat from there. And Rachel was there for me every day, you know, every night. She was always, if she wasn't working, you know, she'd be on, she'd be chat away to me quite the thing. And she was always there from support right from the offset. First it was all serious, you know, how we both had these horrible, you know, scary experiences, and you know, we'd talk about it. I'd ask her what hers was like, and she'd ask me what mine was like, and we'd just compare, and we'd just talk as if it was a normal conversation, you know. But there was no, you know, neither of the two of us felt judged by one another, or you know, we could just open up to one another about these voices. I think it was about a year and a half later, I put my picture, my real picture, up on Facebook, and Rachel saw it, and she just went, well, you know, basically told me she liked me, so we arranged to meet in a hotel. We just hit it off straight away, and we'd been dying to be together for almost 2 years, so that was it, you know. Here we are now.
Free,
yeah. A nine-month-old son now as well, and, you know, together, and nice home, you know, it's things are working out perfect. Yeah, she's been amazing. She's been the backbone of my recovery all the way. You know. I've went from the last few years being so heavily medicated, trapped inside myself, having no life, you know, constant suicide attempts, and hospitalisations and all the rest of it, and home support. I went from that to just being able to walk out and do anything I wanted anytime. The voice is very, I don't even notice my voices are there anymore, you know, it's like, unless I'm really, really tired or, you know, really stressed, sometimes the voice will maybe start a wee bit, but I just tell it to go away. I don't want to listen, I'm busy, you know, and I just tell it to F off politely, you know. You know, it doesn't even remotely bother me anymore. You know, they're just there. I know they can't do me any harm, and I won't allow them to do me any harm, so they're just a part of me.
It sounds a bit like a film.
It does. With Barry Wiley, the movie, you know what I mean? A couple of years' time.
Maybe.
You never know. It's been quite a journey, right enough.
It's still ongoing, yeah.
Aye, well, this is it. It's not over yet.
This episode of Here Be Monsters was pitched to us and recorded by Luke Eldridge. Luke is an independent producer living and working in the UK. The episode was edited by me, Bethany Denton, with help from Jeff Entman and our editor at KCRW, Nick White. In the interview, Barry mentioned the Hearing Voices Network as central to his recovery. The Hearing Voices Network is part of a psychiatric movement that makes a bold claim. They say that just hearing voices shouldn't yield a medical diagnosis. They say that voices can be part of a normal brain, but they're often a sign of trauma, and that's what needs to be addressed. This view isn't entirely at odds with modern psychiatry, but it's not universally supported either. At some point in the future, we might cover this debate in depth on an episode, but for the time being, head over to our website, where we have links to the Hearing Voices Network, Barry Wiley's website, an essay that's critical of the Hearing Voices movement, and the National Institute of Mental Health's fact sheet on schizophrenia. We also have some pictures of Barry and Rachel's wedding. Find us online at hbmpodcast.com. Also on our website, you'll see a link to our 39th episode, which is called A Goddamn Missionary. It's another story about mental health and Jesus, but in that episode, the storyteller finds his solution in medication. Don't forget to buy your tickets to our upcoming live show in LA. Tweet to us, we're at HBMPodcast, or send us an email, hbmpodcast@gmail.com. Music in this episode came from Saracel, The Black Spot, and Flowers. Herbie Monsters is part of the independent producer project of KCRW, who generously supports our show. KCRW's fall fund drive is currently underway, and we encourage you to support us by supporting them. Go to kcrw.com/join to become a member or to renew. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon.